Thank you, Yifei. Over the past few months, we've been looking very closely at the Accountability Acts as researchers, and we're quite troubled by what we find. Within our nonprofit research charter, we're as much involved in looking at the domestic political processes that aid our policy formulation as much as we do looking at the region itself and what's going on in that region. And we do this because there are some fundamental realities that have been alluded to here, that the policy formulation process in the United States has broken down. And that is something that many people in this room realize. Obviously, all individuals and institutions bring ideology and bias and other elements, and we need to realize that our American policymaking is not necessarily scientifically pure and derived in an environment completely free of domestic political considerations. But I do believe that as a nation, and I'll give you some examples of this, we're gradually settling for lower and lower standards of evidence behind our policies in the region. I want to repeat that. We're gradually settling and accepting ever lower standards of evidence backing our regional policies. The Accountability Acts we're talking about today, one which has been passed into law, another which is pending that I'll be talking about, and yet another that is much earlier in the phase of becoming a law, are interesting examples. Both of the ones that are actually in the legislature, passed through the legislature, are an excellent observatory of this phenomenon. As an institute with no particular economic stake in the outcome of any of this, based on religion or ideology or, again, economics, we wish to present the following findings, which are summarized here in my talk, but much more clearly stated in your packet of information about what we've found. Number one, what the legislation hopes to achieve. Number two, the quality of evidence underlying the bill. And finally, how is this going to impact us? And in the case I'll be talking about, it's an economic impact. What is this doing to us as Americans? I think the reward or punishment metaphor of a carrot versus stick clearly shows that accountability acts are all stick, pointed sticks at that. If we look at the accountability, the Saudi Accountability Act of 2003, let me read the objective of the bill. Quote, it is to halt Saudi support for institutions that fund, train, incite, encourage, or in any other way aid and abet terrorism, and to secure full Saudi cooperation in the investigation of terrorist incidents. And if it's determined that Saudi Arabia is not cooperating, the U.S. will prohibit the export of defense items on the Arms Export Control Act, various types of domestic dual-purpose technologies on the Commerce Control List with economic and military uses, and also put a much shorter leash on diplomats, 25 miles radius of the centers that they're serving. This is a very, just to back up to some of the trade impact, the Commerce Control List, you might think it's mainly things such as triggers for bombs, but actually it ranges from everything from acoustic equipment to X-ray machines to swine vaccines. So it's actually fairly wide-ranging in terms of an immediate cut in exports from the U.S. So in summary, in the name of promoting more cooperation in a fight against terrorism, this act threatens to cut U.S. exports, most of which are unfortunately very easily substituted by other national providers. And one would assume this self-infliction of these export restrictions would be based then on some very solid evidence. But unfortunately, this is not the case. The evidence cited in the bill, and I don't have time to review all of it in 15 minutes, so I'll only pick out two particular pieces to focus on, relies substantially upon allegations, unsubstantiated data, the credibility of a research house with some fairly troubling attributes, and the legislation also singles out Saudi Arabia to hold responsible for some problems that are global rather than national in scope. And because it's, for many, not very obvious what motives Saudi Arabia might have to attack a longtime ally and trading partner, the bill then meticulously cites evidence of support for terrorism and lack of cooperation. Some of the characteristics of the evidence, again, the biggest problems are essentially they're not verifiable, and some of them have standards of evidence which we would not even apply to ourselves here in America. But let me read two of the key hinges, two of the key pieces of evidence in the bill that I find to be the most troubling. The first cites as a source the Middle East Media Research Institute in a July 3, 2003 report. Quote, concluded in report on Saudi support for Palestinian terrorists that for decades the royal family of the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia has been the main financial supporter of Palestinian groups fighting Israel. The report notes specifically that Saudi-sponsored organizations have funneled over $4 billion to finance the Palestinian Intifada that began in September 2000. Where is this primary research coming from? Who's producing it? The Middle East Media Research Institute, headed by former Israeli intelligence operative Colonel Yigal Karman, is considered by many here in Washington, D.C., to be a selective news retrieval operation whose primary objective is to present Arabs in the worst possible light, citing their own media. It scores the region for unfavorable press in Arabic, then distributes this as evidence of the monstrosity of the peoples of the region to lawmakers and policymakers in D.C. And unlike, this is something that I think is very interesting, if you look in your packet, unlike other research institutes involved in policy matters, the funding concentration of memory is incredible. Three people, three anonymous sources, fund over 51% of trailing four-year donations and revenues for this institute. So if we think about it that way, essentially three anonymous individuals are giving us an unsubstantiated, non-peer-reviewed report, which is cited as evidence number one in this bill. A second piece of evidence, I think, is equally important. It's one of the linchpins of the reason why we must have a Saudi Accountability Act. Quote, at least 50% of the current operating budget of Hamas comes from people in Saudi Arabia. This anonymous quote taken, it's not anonymous, it was taken from the New York Times, citing anonymous United States and Israeli sources, was reported on September 17th of 2003 in that paper. So here we have a top-tier news outlet, with some people behind the scenes wishing to remain unnamed, with an interest in talking about the Saudis and Hamas, and it really forces us to reconsider other New York Times news sources, the most famous which, working with Times reporter Judith Miller, Ahmed Chalabi, is interesting to consider. Although Chalabi, after feeding her with stories for 10 years, alleging all sorts of things about Iraq, from weapons of mass destruction to links with Al-Qaeda, assured us a couple of weeks ago that now that the Americans were in Iraq and that Saddam was out, none of what was said before matters. Well, in fact, it does matter. One way to look at this bill, then, and I encourage you to look at the other evidence that we've analyzed, is it's a good way to support a preemptive case against Saudi Arabia, particularly things that are working their way through the U.S. court system. The courts have recently cleared members of the government in the terrorism case brought by Robert Motley on behalf of the 9/11 victims. Although it wasn't widely circulated in the press, around the time this evidence was being put together in the bill, November 15th, 2003, U.S. District Judge James Robertson dismissed claims of 1 million claims against two Saudis, Sultan bin Abdulaziz and Turki Al-Faisal, in the $1 trillion lawsuit brought by the families of 9/11. He ruled that there was no compelling evidence that either man acted as an individual or state sponsor to cause the terrorist attacks on New York or the Pentagon. Another possible target of this legislation, legislative preemption, could be increasing Saudi cooperation, tracking financial flows, cooperating with the FBI in investigations, regulating what is essentially a zero-income tax, difficult to regulate, a record-free financial system. If U.S. courts are dismissing and financial controls are replacing chaos and lax oversight, the legislation, again, can be seen as a way of preempting this cooperation and creating maybe facts on the law books in the U.S. American legal system to allow the sponsors of this legislation to overrule due process and cooperation. So really, however cloudy the evidence of this bill, unfortunately, and this is my third point, the economic ramifications are not insubstantial. Although much of the evidence is incorrect, suspect, or obsolete, we can predict with a high degree of certainty a response to this particular Accountability Act in the form of economic retaliation. And let me make a simple declarative statement that I think was backed up by one of the things stated by the esteemed ambassador from Syria. Arab markets punish U.S. exporters, U.S. brands, and U.S. companies for what they see as damage caused by America and the region. In our 2003 trade policy brief titled Dividends of Fear, we tracked this negativity-induced U.S. market share decline over the past 5 years. In 1997, the U.S. had approximately 18% of the total Arab market export, or rather import dollar. The U.S. enjoyed 18% of all of the exports of the Arab market. It has since fallen to only 13% in 2002. And benchmarking other countries that export oil, that import more than $1 billion in American goods, such as Venezuela, Trinidad and Tobago, Malaysia, we believe that the U.S. could easily, like it does in those markets, capture 20% of the total import dollar. So we estimate that the U.S. in the short period of time from 1997 to 2002 already lost $31 billion of export dollars due to demand-side issues. If the trend continues, the U.S. stands to lose an additional $63 billion through 2007, for a total 10-year export loss of $94 billion, dollars that go to other companies that aren't U.S. providers. Now, Saudi Arabia is an important part of this market. It accounts for about 1% of total U.S. exports. The imposition of an Accountability Act and related penalties are more likely than not to accelerate this schism and accelerate this trend. And Saudi Arabia begins to reallocate 66% of existing U.S. imports to alternative suppliers, this converts into retaliation and loss of 81,000 American jobs that could be swept away in 2004. Many of these jobs, by the way, are high margin, attractive service jobs That's $2 billion worth. And $5 billion in manufacturing jobs that account for the U.S. Exports in 2004. Now, why do we believe they could or would do such a thing? Why might Saudi Arabia choose to take its dollars elsewhere? Well, it's because they've already done it. In 2003, there was a $25 billion infrastructure project for the region in gas, oil, and other projects, two-thirds of which in the lead-up to the conflict in Iraq was redirected to competitors of American companies in spite of the qualifications of U.S. bids. It's already been done. In conclusion, then, I want to clarify 2 points. There are real issues surrounding terrorism, financial flows, cooperation with law enforcement between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. And there's an equally real chance that without the Accountability Act, these issues will be resolved through court system and joint task forces. Everybody, and I'm sure everybody in this room, wants facts. You want evidence. You want information leading towards solutions. I look at this act as both an analyst and an American. I say to other Americans that if you liked the Pentagon Office of Special Plans approach and media campaigns leading up to the war on Iraq, you'll love the evidence cited in the Accountability Act. However, if you're one of the growing number of Americans who reject disinformation, vitriol, haste in policy formulation, particularly regarding the Middle East, you should reconsider what we're doing with these acts. Thank you very much.